I have been going to church since I was born, okay? And so to say, I've heard a lot of messages, and I've been in a lot of Bible studies, and I've been reading my Bible for a long time also. And so when I read something and I learn something that's new, it's kind of rare, okay? So I'm not saying that I know it all, okay? Sometimes I'll learn nuances to something, but this week I learned some stuff that was really just new, and I was really excited about it. And so I think we're going to have a good time. I think you're going to enjoy this, but it's going to be a little bit different, okay? Today, just a tad different. So to fully grasp this, we need to look at the context. Have you heard me say that before? Context is key, okay? It's always important in the Bible. And I know you can't fit the context on a coffee mug, but context is key. So there's a couple of things we need to do in the context of the story to actually kind of grasp the beauty of this passage, okay? And you're going to walk out going, wow, I never noticed that either. You're going to love this, okay? So here we go. Here's the context. Do you remember a couple weeks ago we started this series with the parable of the seeds? Do you remember that? Okay? And so we had the idea is that the seed is scattered on the road and the roots can't grow and the birds come along and eat it, right? And then there's the other seed that is on the ground and it's just a little bit of dirt. And then it can't have a big root, right? And the sun comes out, and it has no water because it's a small root, and it dies. And then the other ones you have where the seeds get planted, and there's weeds spring up, and they choke it out. Do you remember this parable? Okay. And then the last one, you know, healthy soil, seed goes in, and, you know, it's able to build a root or make a root or whatever, grow a root, and then it produces a harvest, okay? And that's the parable, okay, that we've been building this whole series around, and it's going to tie in beautifully to this story, okay? So keep that. If you can, keep that in the back of your, like, put that on, like, the right side of your brain, okay? Like, yeah, just think about seeds and soil, okay? And then the other item of context, and this is also important, is last week's message, okay, where Jesus was, he had left Galilee, and he went over to a more Gentile area, and remember, he cast the demons into the pigs, and the pigs ran on the hill, and they died, and everybody's upset, and they asked Jesus to leave. They're afraid of Jesus. So we have a theme of fear, and they actually asked Jesus to leave. And Jesus says, okay. And by the way, that's what God happens in our lives. God doesn't force you to do stuff, right? And so they asked Jesus to leave, and Jesus leaves. So here we go. One group was afraid of Jesus, and they asked him to leave. And we have like this parable of the seeds thing back in our brain, okay? So, and now we're going to read the entire story. And then this is the odd part, but it, just hang with me, okay? We read the entire story, and I will try to read it slowly so you guys can actually understand what I have to say. So here we go, Luke 8, verse 40. Now when Jesus returned back in the Galilee area, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who is a ruler of the synagogue, and falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. As Jesus went, the people pressed around him, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And Jesus said, "Who was it that touched me?" When all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowd surrounds you and are pressing on you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me." And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him. Now she had been made, and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." While he was still speaking, someone from the ruler's house came and said, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher anymore." But Jesus, on hearing this, answered him, "Do not fear, only believe, and she will be well." And when he came to the house, he allowed no one to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the father and mother of the child. And all were weeping and mourning for her. But he said, "Do not weep, for she's not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But taking her by the hand, he called, saying, "Child, arise." And her spirit returned, and she got up at once. And he directed that something should be given her to eat. And her parents were amazed, but he charged them to tell no one what had happened. So in this story, we actually have two stories mixed together. We have Jairus shows up to Jesus and asks him to come to his house and heal his daughter. And he says, okay. And they're heading that way. And then Jesus gets interrupted by this other story of this woman. Okay, so we have a synagogue ruler and this woman. Okay, and so question answer time here. How are they different? Can anybody, how are they different? Does anyone want to venture an answer? Yes. Okay. I did not even have that in my notes, but yes, you're right. Okay. Good. Dave?
Well, just knowing what I know about, you know, cleanliness laws, the synagogue ruler is allowed to go into the house of God, and the woman who's been leaving, she hasn't been for the
entire time. Right. Okay. Did somebody else have their hand raised? Yes, Mackenzie? Yes. And there's all kind of go together. So one has a name, right? And he's in charge of the synagogue. And so he kind of organized the worship service, make sure that people are being taught the law, okay? He's not a Pharisee necessarily, but he's a position of standing, right? A high-level status. With her health condition, anything she touched would become ceremonially unclean. So anything she touched could not go to the, you know, for worship and stuff like that. So people would avoid her, okay? People wanted to... If you're on LinkedIn, you want a Jairus on your LinkedIn account, right? Okay? Not this woman, okay? So so he had status, he had position. He's in the religious crowd, right? He you know, taught the law, but she was considered unclean, and she's running out of options. Somehow she had some money, we see in the text, but she'd spent all of her money to get healed, okay? And with her condition, there weren't marriage was probably not an option, okay? And so... she had very few options left in life at this point in time, where Jairus had, he's doing fine, right, career-wise. So we see like these two almost opposites in this story. But Luke does something really cool here, okay? There are eight things between the two stories that are similar. Each person does that are similar, okay? So check this out. Both of them fall at Jesus' feet, okay? Both stories, a daughter is involved. Both stories, the number 12 is involved. She's had this bleeding issue for 12 years. The daughter is 12 years. Both of them are in desperate circumstances. The daughter is about to die, and she's out of options. Both the healing is immediate. Both healings involve touch. Jesus doesn't always touch somebody. Sometimes he can just say it, right? But... then you have both deal with cleanliness impurity laws, one because of death, okay, and one because of the blood. And so when Jesus goes to the daughter who's dead, right, that would be unclean also. Then there's a fear element in both of these stories, and faith or belief are mentioned in each story. So at face value, two completely different people. But when you put them together, Luke actually takes effort and there's eight similar. So what Luke wants to, here's what Luke wants us to see. Two completely different situations, but the same principles, okay? Different people, same principles. So now we're going to look at the story again. So verse 40 says, "So now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who was a ruler of the synagogue, and falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she was dying. As Jesus went, the people pressed around him." So here's, this is cool, ready? The pressed around him is the same word that Luke uses in the parable for the weeds choking. Pressed, choking, same exact words. Okay? So here we have this crowd. So remember in the parable of the weeds, The plant springs to life right away, right? But it gets choked out by being pressed. Okay, so the crowd here is like, oh, great, Jesus is back. They're excited about him being back. But the crowd quickly turns, okay? So just like the weeds in the parable, right? So this word press, it's the same thing. And so here we go. So there's a woman who has a discharge of blood for 12 years. And though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. And immediately her discharge of blood ceased. So she's there. She needs healing, and she'd like to get to Jesus, but the crowd is pressed around Jesus. The crowd is making it difficult for her to get access to Jesus, just like the parable, right? And so her uncleanness would pass whoever she touches. She realizes that as she tries to get there, everybody she's touching is not going to be happy, okay, because of her uncleanness. And Jesus was this respected spiritual leader. So here we have somebody who is ceremonially unclean, trying to make contact with a spiritual leader. And he's walking, Jesus most likely is walking with a synagogue leader, who is also a spiritual person, right? So she's showing up, and she's just kind of messing with the entire spiritual vibe at this moment, right? And so she's going to have to go against normal behavior. She's going to have to go against the expectations of others to touch divine power. Do you realize that? She's going to have to, people are going to be annoyed at her, and they're going to be upset at her for doing this, but she's willing to risk all of that so she can touch Jesus. And the thing is this, by her touching Jesus, there's like kind of a potential that she could make him unclean in the people's eyes, right? We know that he's not going to be, but so there's all this at risk. And I think she got to a point where she's like, I don't care what anybody thinks. I just need Jesus. And isn't that kind of where we should be all the time? Where I don't care what everybody else thinks. I just need Jesus. This is not an accident, No, this is an intentional act of faith where she had to seek him out and she had to navigate through this crowd that was pressing on Jesus. And she believed, she had faith that if she touched him, she'd be healed. So she had the fear of rejection by the crowd, right? And she had faith that it touched him. And verse 45 says this, who was it that touched me? When all denied it, Peter said, Master, the crowd's around you and are pressing on you. Like, how would you even know who touched you? Everybody's touching you, right? That's the idea here. But Jesus said, someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me. And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, meaning she couldn't like hide from Jesus, like if he could figure out power came out from him, he's going to figure out who I am. So she came trembling, fear again, theme, and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And Jesus said, Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. So Jesus wants to know who touched him while he's being pressed or choked by the crowd. So she's still afraid. She's afraid of what everybody else is going to think about her, right? Because she just touched all these people as she approached Jesus. And she's kind of afraid of what Jesus might think. And there have been times in my life, and probably you, when you approach Jesus, you're kind of wondering, how is he going to respond to me with all of my stuff, my baggage? How is Jesus going to respond to me? And so she's kind of afraid to say, "This it was me, I needed help," right? But he asks, and Jesus like insists, he wants her to say something. And so she realizes she can't hide from Jesus. And so really, Jesus' question is an opportunity for her to respond in faith by risking the response. You see, faith, sometimes there's a risk in faith, isn't there? And so he's asking her a question, and she's taking a risk, but she responds in faith. It's like this crisis moment. Think about it. She got healed. She doesn't know what people are going to think about her because of her past, her situation that she's touched people. And she doesn't know what Jesus is going to think. She didn't actually ask permission, would you heal me? She just like stole some power, right? She just touched him. And so there's this moment of crisis. Jesus goes, who touched me? He's looking around, who touched me? And she has like this moment, she has to make a decision. And let's go back to our parable of the seeds. So some seeds fell on the ground and they couldn't break the dirt and they were carried away by birds. Seeds fell on the stone ground, couldn't push through and develop a strong root. And some seeds were in the thorns and they're choked out. And she's right there, pressed by people, potentially being choked out. And she confesses her faith in Jesus as to why she touched him. This is when her faith digs a root. She takes a stand and says, I touched you. I reached out and touched you. And Jesus responds with her statement of faith. And he says, your faith has made you well. He declares here in front of all the people that she has been made whole. So this word can be translated saved. So it's not just healed, but saved. She's whole. And he wants the crowd to realize that she is safe and sound. She's whole in the presence of the crowd. And get this, he calls her daughter. Jesus is including her in his family of faith. Isn't that cool? Okay. Think about how it could have been felt, where she's been like, people have avoided her for 12 years, right? People have been pushed away. She's socially rejected. And she takes this risk. And Jesus goes, daughter, my daughter, your faith has made you well. He stood up for her. So as I wrote this, I'm like, it's kind of an emotional moment here, emotional story, but some of you remember it, some of you may not. But about a year or so after I got divorced, the Stacks spoke at our church. Remember the Stacks speaking at our church? And I love Wayne and Nancy Stacks. And they did a great job. Remember they did the marriage thing and they interviewed him, and you know, Wayne talked about him trying to like, you know, be with Nancy and all that stuff. It was kind of awkward, but it was great in Wayne style. And but I remember this, they sit down and Nancy just stands up and says, I have something to say. Do you remember this moment? I remember it a lot, okay? So, because that was impromptu, and she stands up, and she says that Jeff and the boys, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but Jeff and the boys have been through a lot, but I am proud of them. Do you remember this? I will never forget this moment. Why? Because she stood up for me. She kind of like endorsed me, like, he's my son type thing, right? And that's how this lady must have felt, if not better. But here he had the Messiah, the Son of God, says, who just healed her, said, my daughter. So she had this moment where she had to decide, is she going to stand? Is she going to take that step of faith and said, I touched you, I needed you, I touched you and you healed me, and come out of the crowd and risk whatever. But she does it. She takes that step of faith, and all faith requires a little bit of a leap, right? And she takes that step, and Jesus responds and says, you're well, not just healed, but you are well, you are saved, you're made whole, and you're my daughter. It is so cool. So meanwhile, this is taking place, Jairus is there. Now, I would forgive Jairus if he's a little tense, right? Because his daughter's dying, and Jesus was actually on the way to his daughter, so this lady kind of slow down the process, and I get all frustrated at the grocery store and somebody's slow in front of me, so I could imagine Jairus was a little preoccupied, right? And while he's waiting, this is what happens in verse 49. While he was still speaking, Jesus is still talking to the people. Jairus is like, can we go? Can we go? Oh, my daughter's dying. Please hurry. Jesus is talking, and somebody shows up and says this, your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher anymore. But Jesus, on hearing this, answered, do not fear, only believe, and she'll be well. By the way, in this passage, sometimes it's translated as faith, sometimes it's believe. And in this passage, faith is always used as a noun, and the verb form is always translated believe, but it is the same root word, okay? So do not fear, only have faith or believe, and she will be well. And when he came to the house, he allowed no one to enter him, except Peter and John and James and the father and the mother of the child. I wonder what Jairus was thinking. His daughter was dying. Somebody said she's dead. And Jesus, she's not dead. That'd be tough, wouldn't it? Imagine they're walking back going, you know, it's too late. Kind of reminded me of the story of Lazarus. You know, if you'd come here a little bit earlier, it'd be okay. And then verse 52 says this, all were weeping and mourning for her, but he said, do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. So it's interesting. So Jesus comes back into Galilee. They're excited to see him. You have these crowds following Jesus around, right? And Jesus just heals this person. This death issue is too big for Jesus in their mind because they're laughing at him, right? You see that? So the crowd's kind of like wants him around, but they don't really trust that he can heal this person, this daughter that died. And so the crowd's not nearly as loyal or as faithful as the other people in the story. And so they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But taking her by the hand, he called, saying, child, arise. And her spirit returned, and she got up at once. And he directed that something should be given her to eat. And her parents were amazed, but he charged them to tell no one what had happened. Once again, you have a crisis of faith. There's a fear in faith. They're afraid that she's going to die. And you know, he says, Jesus says, do not fear. So there's fear or faith. And Jesus says, don't be afraid, only believe. Jairus faces a crisis, just like the lady did. He could have said, it's too late, Jesus. Just go on home. Sometimes I think we say that to Jesus in our lives. It's just too late, God. I've already blown it. Just move on. But Jairus has a choice, and he walks Jesus to his house. So we have these two stories to drive home this point, some points about faith. And first off, faith approaches Jesus with humility. Faith approaches Jesus with humility. Both the rich and the poor, the connected and the rejected, come to Jesus in humility, falling at his feet in the story. You see that? They both come in humility, and they both fall at his feet. So you might think you're coming to God, but if you're coming to God thinking you got your act together, you are missing the boat. You know, you don't, it's not like you say, hey, God, you know, accept me, you know, I'm already close to you anyways. No, no, no. You show up in humility. Rich, poor, connected, rejected, everybody has to show up with humility. This guy, Jairus, doesn't depend on his high status. And then she doesn't let her low status stop her from reaching Jesus. Sometimes we do the opposite, right? We get so down on ourselves that we're like, oh, Jesus would never help me, or I'm too far gone. And in this story, both extremes approach Jesus with humility. And then, in both stories, faith leads to action for it to be complete. Faith leads to action for it to be complete. They both had fear. And for some, fear keeps us away from Jesus. Right? For others, their faith pushes them through their fear so they can be healed by Jesus. And in this story, both act in faith when there's a crisis moment. Both make a decision. I'm going to trust Jesus in this moment. They have faith, they overcome fear, and they receive healing touch. Just like the seeds that produce fruit. And then, this is kind of obvious, but we need to remind ourselves of this. Jesus' power demonstrates that he's the Messiah, the Son of God. The Gospels over and over again are trying to prove to us and show us and demonstrate to us that he is the Son of God. And once again, we see Jesus shows up and he heals somebody with all the doctors couldn't heal. And then right after that, somebody who's dead, he rises her from the grave, but he brings her back to life. And we see in this story, though, that not everyone will believe or have faith in Jesus. The lady did. Jairus did. Maybe some others. But some of the crowd doesn't. We know they're going to turn on him later. And some of the crowd even doubted it at the moment. She's dead. You're not going to be able to, bring her back to life. So as I thought about this story, you know, it's just like, I think we all have crises of faith. We all have moments where we got to trust God again. And I kind of hoped that in my life, by the time I got to my age, that this would be like old hat. Like this would be like, you know, on autopilot, you know. And what I've discovered is that every new situation requires another step of faith. You know, I really thought like after I decided to be a pastor and I decided this and that, that all the big decisions would be solved. And I would just like, you know, wherever God says, I go. And I would just like float along with no tension in my life. And I've discovered I was totally wrong, okay? That every part of life, there's a step and there's a crisis moment. And we have to decide, are we going to respond in faith or are we not? And in this story here, we have a lady rejected and we have a man accepted. And they both respond in faith. So it kind of leads us to this. Will you humble yourself so Jesus will heal and save you? On one hand, this just sounds really simple, doesn't it? But I've discovered that sometimes I don't like to humble myself. You know, it's like, I'm sure it's a character flaw, but I don't always like asking for help. Because if I ask for help, that means I don't know how to do something. You know, so like, You guys have known me long enough to see that that has shown up at times. And so like this, just even this morning, last night, Zach's car broke down. And I'm like, who am I going to ask for help? Should I ask for help? I'm like, oh, I'll ask Pat. You know why I ask Pat for help? One, he knows cars. Two, he already knows I don't know cars. Okay? So if I had to call up Scott Jacobs and ask for help, then Scott Jacobs would know that I don't know about cars. You know, like, let's keep the damage under control, right? Is my idea there? And so I called somebody who already knew I was a car failure. But you know, why? Because I don't want to humble myself. Because, you know, it just hurts so much. And sometimes, though, we do the same thing with Christ. We need healing. We need something. We're struggling with an issue in our life, and we just want to work harder at it. We want to like work really hard. This is like a total man thing. We want to go to the spiritual man cave, work really hard, and come back out and go, Jesus, I have solved my problem. And he's like, bless you, my child. You know, no, but the reality is that's not how it works. The part of going into the spiritual man cave is really about being humble. Okay, it's got a small little door. You got to humble yourself and get into the man cave, right? And so we have to humble ourselves so Jesus will heal and save you. And a lot of times, we don't want to do this. Now, this could be like, this could be the next step in front of you, choosing to trust Christ, you know, his work on the cross for the first time and asking Jesus to forgive you, to save you, to give you eternal life in him. This could be like the first time you decided to follow Christ. I mean, we all have to get to that point at some point, right? We have to make a decision. Who is Jesus? And for some of us, that decision to say, I believe that Jesus died on the cross for my sins, is a huge step of faith. Before you make that step, it's a crisis moment. Do I trust? Do I not trust? And it's a huge step. And I believe that you get the same response that she got in the story. Jesus goes, you are made well. You're whole. You are saved. You are my child, right? That's that story there. But for some of us, though, we've already made that decision. But we still have to keep trusting him. Jesus goes and says, hey, I'd like to heal another part of your life. And you're like, oh, that's like so tender. Or that's so, it's not a big issue, God. Can we just like let that one go? And he's calling you to take a new step of faith, another stage of your faith. And so it always kind of comes down to humility. This past couple weeks, I've been working through some stuff, and I've had like some times where I'm praying to God and I'm just telling God how much I hurt. Do you know how humble that is for me? How hard it is for me to do that? To go, God, here we go. There's some times I've been sitting on my couch and I'm like my quiet time mode. I have like a spot, cup of coffee, Bible app, and it's my spot, right? After a few games of Sudoku. And the Sudoku is like the warming up to being humble, okay? Sometimes I have to, like, it's hard sometimes, but I sit there and I'm like, God, I'll just say this. It's going to sound really like, well, whatever. Here we go. I'm practicing humility. I'm praying and I'm like, God, I'm just scared, or I hurt, or I'm not happy about this. And I realize I can't fix any of it. And sometimes I kind of like almost curl up in like a ball fetal position on my couch when the kids aren't around, and I'm like, I need you. You're like, I need you. Do you see that? And that's hard because that's humbling. I'd like to pray like this. God, I'm about to attack the world on your name, and I will bring back victory for you. That's what I would like to pray, right? You know, like, God, I have this sin issue, and I've almost beat it all by myself. You know, that's what I would like to do. But it's not working, okay? And so sometimes I have to go, I mean, God, I'm like a 6-year-old little boy scared of everything. I need your help. Okay, that's kind of, do you understand that humility thing? And if you bring this up outside of church, I'll be so unhappy with you, okay? But sometimes we have to humble ourselves so Jesus will heal us. We don't show up to the doctor and go, hey, doc, I'm totally healthy. I don't need your help at all. He's like, yeah, sure, right? And so we show up, we have to humble ourselves so Jesus will heal and save you. This is a little bit of a tangent, but here we go anyways. I've also discovered that this process of humbling yourself and asking for Jesus' help is not temporary. I used to think if I showed up and asked for Jesus' help, he would help me, and then I could be back on my own again. That would be sweet, but it's not. What happens is this. This state of being humble before God, asking for help, is supposed to be continual, right? So the question is, will you humble yourself so Jesus will heal and save you? And then as a follow-up question, will you take a risk and put your faith in Jesus? This is salvation or just your daily living, even if you're scared. Even if those around you won't understand. Even if those who don't know, even if you don't know how others respond, you might be like, if I do this, I'm not sure how people respond. Will you take a risk and put your faith in Jesus? And here's what this story tells us. It doesn't matter who you are, okay? That when we humble ourselves and we step out in faith, Jesus heals and saves. And he gives new life. Both people in the story got new life, right? When we humble ourselves, we step out in faith, he heals, he saves, and he gives new life. And he claims us as his family. Isn't that amazing? Jesus is like, that's my bro. That's Jeff. I died for him. I love him. You know what I mean? Like, I can trust in that relationship, and he has hope for me, and he's working in my life, and actually he believes in my potential. And even if I'd never fixed it all together, he still loves me, even if my potential's never reached, right? And so when we humble ourselves, we step out in faith, we actually get Jesus.